Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are in the Allstate Showcase Studio on this very special Friday afternoon at WGN Radio. Welcome to the afternoon after the great Walk of Fame induction ceremonies. I can't stress enough what a great day it is to see a lot of old friends come back, and a lot of them have gone to other radio stations, but they come back to say hello and pay tribute to those being inducted, and that was certainly the case today. So much fun for that. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as well. Let me ask you a question. So would you go, would you take a meeting if it was at, say, a yoga class or spin class? Apparently that's a thing. We'll talk to Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network about that a little bit later. But we start on Fridays with Andrea Haynes, who's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation in the Chicago Tribune and the content director. How's that, director? For Red Eye. Welcome back, Andrea.
Thanks, Steve. Good to be here.
Let's bring the mic a little closer to you. Let's start with Red Eye, because we always give it short shrift. What's coming up this weekend?
Yeah, so Red Eye has a cool cover this week. It's on Eve Ewing, who's a local poet. She has a book of poetry out called Electric Arches. So we went and did a tour of her Chicago. She's a Chicago native, so she took us to some different places.
Oh, nice.
Places meaningful to her and different spots of the city, so it's kind of fun. And there's also some stuff in there for the British Royal Wedding.
Is that this weekend?
So if you want to be British in Chicago, not just how to watch the wedding, but places where you can go do British things, quote-unquote.
Is the Red Lion still up on Lincoln Avenue?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
There's two now, and they're in, you know, one's in a slightly different location than the one you might remember, but
right.
Yes, you can still do that.
All right. So that's that. Okay. Well, you and I are both changing offices soon. So
very soon.
This story that you pulled has, it strikes a chord with, I think, both of us, certainly with me, and it's about how the workplace, the office place, is changing. Used to be you had your own office in many cases, and then there were cubicles. You had your own desk, and now you're losing your own desk. The new developments are getting rid. It's all shared workspace. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so in this study, more than half of executives, which I thought was a large number, say they plan to switch to unassigned worker seating. In other words, not only do you not have much of a desk, but you don't have an assigned desk.
Right.
Meaning you might have a locker, or you might have some other way that you get your own things, but you're going to have very few things, and it's going to be first come, first serve for who's sitting where and all those kinds of things.
That seems like that would lead to children fighting.
I think I'd probably want to fight about it. You know, that just seems like it might make me cranky in the morning if I had to jockey for desk space. Now, let's assume that maybe those are people that aren't always in the office. You know, I have friends who have come to this earlier because they work for big multinationals and they do a lot of conference calls often from home. So they've had, you know, they call it hoteling,
right,
where you hotel at a particular desk.
Well, my wife does that. She works from home and she comes downtown, you know, infrequently. But when she does, they have spots where, you know, people come in and come out. But the way I read this article is this is going to be more every day. Now, in the newsroom where I've worked, we don't have assigned seating because, you know, we're working shifts, basically, and people come in and come out. However, there always are people then who make what is a shared workspace sort of their own workspace, which drives me crazy because I love their kids or their candles, but I don't want to work with them when they're not there.
Yeah.
But on the other side, I understand how if you're there every day, you want to make something sort of your home. And that's what seems like it's disappearing.
It is. I really think so. And, you know, we cover this as a more big issue, societal issue. But as you point out, you and I are going through this right now.
Right, right.
Our respective newsrooms are moving. Newsrooms have always been open. So we've been a little bit already in that direction. But it is exactly as you said. It's just a cultural shift. Like, we're going to have less space, less desk space. So all of those things that we're more accustomed to having to personalize or to store things that we need every day, there's just a cultural shift of just you don't have all your little tchotchkes and all your little supplies and everything to cozy up with. It's just going to be a lot more lean environment.
And I'm sure each workplace finds its own sort of middle and people will adapt. But the article talks about lockers. And we are going to have lockers in the new place. And I just thought that was kind of a brand new, unusual thing. Well, I would imagine what happens is the people who design the workspaces say, oh, it's working here, we're going to put it there. And turns out lockers now for people are pretty common.
Yeah, and then I guess you'd have your little bin of your favorite coffee mug and your, you know, your pens or whatever it is that you really like to have with you.
Right.
It is funny, though. I remember when I got
I have
to
a blanket.
Sometimes,
I like to keep my blanket close to me.
Keep your blankie.
Right.
You need those in a lot of cold offices.
No, just sometimes during scary times.
When I got to the Sun-Times, I was actually issued a locker. We had lockers. This was at 401 North Wabash, which is now Trump Tower. So
right.
It was the old building. And when I I got to my locker, there was a bottle of whiskey in it.
So. Nice. Was it a welcoming gift?
I think it was accidentally left by the previous occupant.
Do you know who it was?
So I guess the more things change, the more they stay the same,
that's
right?
That's so funny. But so the what the bosses say is that this open workspace in sort of infuses innovation into the crowd. It creates more camaraderie. That's what the bosses say. The study revealed something altogether different.
Yeah, so that's some of the gloss that gets put on it. The study where I assume people were able to actually answer anonymously, more than half of them admitted that the primary reason for doing this was to reduce costs. You just, people have less space. That means less rent, basically. I mean, to put it in the simplest terms. A few of them do still say it's like to promote innovation and sharing and to retain and attract talent. Because one thing that I will say on the positive side, it's not hopefully only shrinking the individual worker space, it's then expanding the communal spaces in the office.
Yeah, right. And that's what the other, and again, not to make this about me, because we have the lockers and all, but where we're moving has much nicer communal space. Absolutely.
Yeah. Really,
my situation is described perfectly by this article.
Agreed. I think both of us with our moves, we're right on the kind of the cutting edge of what's happening here.
Right.
So then you hopefully, you have the barista room, you have coffee areas, everyone's on laptops now, so you don't need to be chained to your own individual desk. You can move around, maybe go to a hangout area or go to the coffee area. And, I think there's more flexibility, more of those little shared conference rooms, things like that.
Okay, here's the other weird thing, though, that's brought up in this one or another piece. Privacy is greatly diminished. And there's no way to sort of, and again, where I work, I'm always in an open workspace, so I don't see that. But if you're losing your little cubicle walls, you have never have any sort of moment to yourself to do whatever you do when no one's looking. And that could inhibit some people.
Yeah, I think there is an important issue there, too. And there's sort of the psychological space issue, which I think is maybe more complex than we can get into. But I do think that's important. And we had a separate story this week about specifically how women tend to feel in open offices. And they had really a lot of common experience of just like feeling like they were on display. Like one woman said, I feel like a zoo animal, and I think in situations where they're maybe more male dominated and a woman walks through the room and everybody's looking at her and, women notice that and they start to feel like, okay, my legs are on display at my desk, literally. What if I wear a skirt and right. I have to worry all day about how my legs are positioned? Or what if, I have to walk by a bunch of men and
I understand their anxiety. I do. But it's also self-created, right? I mean, although there were examples of some guy leering at this woman through computer screens, but it's sort of something
which
that
by definition makes it not self-created.
No,
right?
I understand that. But if you're worried about what other people are thinking, a lot of times you're creating that too.
Yeah, I think it expands on itself, right? It's like it makes you a little paranoid, but I think there were very real examples of things that, male designers said that were incredibly inappropriate, including one on the architecture team of a particular layout who said, it's like a nude beach. Pretty soon everybody's nude. You all get used to it. And it's like, I think if you're a woman, hearing that it's like a nude beach is perhaps not the most reassuring
not
comment.
Not the way to go. Read it in Blue Sky Innovation. Andrea Haynes, thanks for coming by. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Steve. You too.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
All right, Tim, in the studio now, we're joined by Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, and Tom is known for his great ideas, his insight into the world of business, his wisdom, really, his deep understanding. And this is the worst idea I've ever heard of.
You don't want to be sweating next to somebody who's trying to sell you something?
It's so interesting. So the idea is we're talking about sweat working and the idea that more and more people are taking meetings at spin classes or at workout sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that for me.
Well, we're not allowed to really talk about gender division anymore, right? But
right.
I see it more with women than I do with men.
Okay.
So a soul cycle class or a yoga class, things like that, one of the boot camps. And so they're saying, people have very busy lives, and both men and women getting home to be with their kids and doing things around the house or commuting on trains or whatever. And the one thing people make time for is working out. So if you're not going to go to a happy hour, and you're not going to go to lunch because you want to get your work done, but you are going to exercise, that people are saying, let's meet.
So are you saying, maybe if I can read between the lines, that this is the female golf game?
You know what? I've never looked at it that way. You're the creative one. That's interesting. I think there's
it's
something
interesting
to
that I'm
that.
The creative one, or no?
That's a very, you know, the difference is that number one, there's not too much talking going on during it.
During this class, right? Right.
There's not
the
drinking, there's not smoking cigars, there's not 4 hours, but it is, and there's men that do it as well, but you are right. Me saying to you, hey, Steve, let's go do a yoga class together. Right.
I ask that because the golf game can be exclusionary. You know, it's like certain people don't golf, so it's just not going to be good for them. It doesn't fit everyone. But to me, man, I think a lot fewer people are going to be inclined to go get sweaty and uncomfortable with their boss or with someone whose business.
Oh, I disagree entirely. Really? Yeah, really? I think if you're friendly with people, if you work in a collegial environment, I think with your boss and a subordinate, you can do it. I think it's a great thing for bosses to do with their staff is to go and do a class.
Really, to work out.
I think
together.
It's a terrific thing to do because it's non-alcohol related. Right, which
sure.
is always a plus.
Right.
It sponsors a healthy work environment. I think there's a lot of things that are great from a subordinate level, and you see it with clients.
But there
it's
are people
great
who
thing.
Just aren't in shape.
Well, then right? don't go. There are people who aren't golfing.
Well,
you don't go.
That's my point.
Yeah.
I guess there. Are,
I'm sure one day there'll be the next article written, Steve.
The body
will be
shaming.
Somebody saying that because I'm out of shape and overweight, I'm discriminated against. That no one asks me to go to the workout class.
Actually, I've got a first draft. You want to read it?
I'm sure. but I think that you're exactly
that's
right. That'll
my point.
Be the there'll be a negative backlash because I don't work out, so now I can't be with my healthy boss in private time.
Right.
And that's ridiculous.
So my boss is running and jogging, and I'm not a jogger. I can't jog, so I'm missing
Correct.
Out on that time.
Correct.
So the lesson of that is that there are just some things that you can't.
That everybody can't
so
do.
Let's take it back to golf then. So
yep.
then golf isn't necessarily a terrible thing because just because not everyone can golf.
No, I think, listen, certain people golf and getting, the ideal thing about the old-fashioned, air quotes, old boys club on the golf course, there's truth to it. But
sure.
what it is it's about a love of golf. Right? That's where it originates from.
To me, it's like talking to your kids while you're in the car because you're not really looking at each other.
No,
so
you're
you can
doing
do that
your
if you're
own
golfing,
thing.
You're doing other things.
What it is it's time. And so you've got to figure out whether you're at a Cubs game, a Bears game, golfing, doing spin class, whatever it is. You've got to figure out a way to differentiate and allow you to get one-on-one time with a boss, with a client, with whatever it is.
Have you had a meeting in it during a spin class?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the Steve Bertrand camp of...
That's hurtful.
Yes.
That's a hurtful thing.
You're my idol in many ways. Exercise so, is not one of them. That's a mentorship.
You have not done it then.
I have not.
Right.
However, I have my staff that's done it with their clients. I have salespeople that have taken clients and gone to do a yoga or a spin cycle class. I think it's great.
It's really interesting because to me, working out and sweating and all of that mess is such a personal thing. And to share that with someone in a professional sort of setting that you may not know so well.
I mean this genuinely, not poking fun at you because I feel the same way to an extent.
It's an age
I
thing.
Don't think it is that way. I think that people who like to do classes... They don't view it as too
right,
as so personal. When you're kind of us, and we're kind of the same cut from the same cloth, you're kind of like, well, I'm not that great at it. I'm a little awkward, no, so I don't want to.
I can do an hour spin class, but I take 4 breaks.
Right.
Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, thanks for coming by.
Always good to see you, my friend.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
A little bit later in the program, Louis Lazar will be back. I love when Louis comes by. He's a writer for the Chicago Business Journal, and it covers airlines a lot, so we'll talk about some airline stories and things like that. But Louis also has a story about Loyola and just how well Loyola did with the when they made the Final Four, what it meant for, web searches, but just cash and all of that, donations as well. So we'll talk to Louis about that. Right now in the studio, though, as I said before the break, is Tim Roach, the CEO of Lender. We talk about you all the time, but we don't talk to you, Tim. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks for having me back, Steve. It's good to be here.
All right, so let's just start generally because, you know, I read the advertisement for you and talk about how you help businesses who are in need of cash. But tell me in a nutshell what it is Lender does and in the void it fills that banks and others don't fill.
So Lender is a specialty finance company. We finance small to mid-sized businesses, traditional factoring, traditional financing for businesses that basically need a bridge loan, a bridge advance that a bank can't do in a time constraint. for many different reasons why they need the capital.
Okay, so you could be a business that had a chink in your history, right? And maybe the bank isn't interested. You're
absolutely
more likely to show interest in them.
Your credit scores are not above a 700, and you did something 10 years ago, a bank has no interest. And we have several clients that are north of 700 that are great business, but they don't want to wait 6 weeks to get funding.
Well, I was going to say, so you have great credit, you've got a great history, but you've got an also awesome opportunity that you need the capital for, you can't wait for. They would come to someone like you.
Absolutely. We hope that Chicago's weather will get better, so the outdoor patio needs updating.
Right.
You don't want to wait 6 weeks and miss the summer.
How is credit these days? Is it loosening up a little bit?
I feel it is a little bit. I think the specialty finance, the world and where we live now is so entrenched and so part of the business community that the banks are not really still not playing. And I'm not really sure why, but I feel credit has loosened up a little bit, but technology on our side has continued to improve.
So they're leaving you guys alone.
They are leaving
moving
us alone.
In on your ball field.
I hope they stay away.
I'm sure. Yeah. Okay. So we've talked before about one of the things you're trying to do. It was to bring in a debit card too, a debit card system for people who take out money from you, and that's up and running.
Yes. So we launched our lender business debit card, and it's just another way that we can create financing for our clients, offer them a little bit better flexibility in their payments. We can redeploy funds on their card instantly. So the process is becoming more streamlined.
So the debit card, let's talk from your side first. The debit card's good for you as a business guy because it gives you an added tool to market, right, to people who are interested in this. Do others offer that such a debit card?
It's a great way to market. There's only a few players in the space that are doing this currently. And so that's why we liked it. We've spent a lot of time researching it. It also gives us the ability to track what a client's doing, how they're spending, how much they're spending, what time of the month they're spending, what they're spending it on. And then we provide that report to our clients. And so we try to help educate and make sure that the money that they're borrowing from us is for the right reasons.
That's funny because you would think if you're running your own business and you're spending your own money that you would know what you're spending it on or how you're spending it. But I would imagine sometimes to get a fresh outside set of eyes or an evaluation of it might be a real eye-opener for business owners.
You would be surprised.
Really tell me about that.
Yeah, you would be surprised. I have a lot of our clients that I spend a lot of time talking to, and they do a really great job at running their business. They're great owner-operators, but a lot of them didn't come from a finance background. So having a little bit of assistance or help there and having them understand their cash flow, understanding where they're spending their money, why they're spending their money, how to spend it and project out. Too many times we're looking in our rearview mirror instead of actually projecting out and looking at our budget and making sure our budget is in line with what we said it was going to be this year. And when it's not, a lot of people don't revise it. And so what we really try to do is make sure that they're using the money that we're lending them, they're using it for the right reasons.
So are you a lending company or are you a counseling company?
We're a lending company, but we want to be able to educate our clients. We want to be able to inspire our clients. We want to obviously be inspired by our clients. But I think our responsibility is truth in lending, letting know our clients what they're getting, why they're getting it, and also for us to create a relationship and a bond with that client, because as long as they want to borrow and use us as that facility, we want to be there for them.
So what percentage of your business, and people come back?
Yes. On average, our renewals right at three times.
Oh, well, great. So what is it the mistake that people make to sort of, you were talking to me about one business who had several lines out and was making a mistake like that. What do you see that people are doing when they first need a client or a bank such as yours and they choose the wrong one?
I think the biggest problem is the nice thing about our space is you get access to capital very quickly. The bad thing about our space is you get access to capital very quickly.
It's like Thanksgiving dinner.
Right.
You can overeat.
Exactly. And so you get a line or you get a advance or you get a loan, and that cash is in your bank account the next day, and then you get another one and you get another one. And now you've been stacked on two or three times, meaning you've taken three loans out. And so you create a cash crunch. And if anything goes wrong in your business, you have real problems.
Okay, let's go back to the debit card then. Is that where that would fit, right?
Because the debit card would solve for that. So if we give, we gave you a $50,000 loan or an advance, and then we came on top of that and said, listen, Steve, we see your business is growing. We can verify your income. We can verify your revenue. We're going to add an additional $15,000 through the debit card. And this will allow you to use that money for what we know is the right reason. And then if you come back and say, business is still growing, the weather in Chicago is fantastic, and I need an additional $30,000, we can deploy that money on your card instantly. We can push right to your card and you have that access.
Tim Roach, the CEO of Lender, thanks for coming by.
It was glad to be here, Steve. See you soon.
You bet. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. For those who think Chicago isn't looking ahead to the future, think again. Yet another project was released to redevelop the near Northside Lincoln Yards to become a riverside entertainment hub with three new venues. Sterling Bay is the developer taking on the business of building at least one intimate amphitheater, a medium-sized venue, and the new soccer stadium backed by the Chicago Cubs owner, Tom Ricketts. Not convinced? Well, further details have been released for the plans of the new South Loop neighborhood, the 78. It's 62 acres of new buildings that will begin in 2019, filled with a mix of housing, retail, restaurants, cultural institutions, and office space. A new CTA stop will even be integrated into the neighborhood, and it'll also be home of the new Discovery Partners Institute, a development hub for 2,000 students. It'll be a warm welcome for the 78th neighborhood of Chicago. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
The number of the week on this Friday is 85%. Netflix has pivoted to spending most of its money, most of its new money on shows of their own. In fact, 85% of new spending is going toward original programming. Netflix will have about 1,000 originals by the end of the year. We're not quite halfway through. We've seen most of them, 470 of which are yet to debut.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:51, and here we are in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It is always a good day when Louis Lazar is in the studio, and by golly, here he is, reporter for the Chicago Business Journal. Louis, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you.
We talk about the fact that you cover the airlines, and there's a number of airline stories you've written in recent days, but I want to start with this study you got, or this information you got from Loyola University about just what the Final Four did for them, how much it helped them.
It completely, changed their profile in the world at large, particularly in the social media universe, where people suddenly woke up and were paying attention to what Loyola is all about, which is nice because they were just sort of an afterthought here right in Chicago and certainly beyond Chicago.
So the Google searches and all that stuff is up, which I get, right? But also the donations are up.
Right. About 600+% and this is just in that narrow window of about a month when the Final Four was in progress, they noticed this huge spurt suddenly.
So the people who weren't betting on Loyola because they didn't pick them
were graciously contributing.
And they started contributing.
Right.
Yeah. Which is nice. I would imagine they'd take that.
No, they're not complaining, let me tell you. But the question, of course, is will it happen again? Will lightning strike twice?
Right.
That's
Well, okay, right, and it probably won't. I mean, lightning is lightning.
I've watched the sports enough to know you never know.
That's right. You're the college basketball guy.
That's
too.
Right.
Okay, well, what I was going to say, though, is what we do know is going to happen is that it looks like they're going to increase their student base because there also was a great increase in the number of prospective students searching out Loyola.
And I'm sure if people with students with a proficiency in basketball are going to be giving the place a close.
Right.
If they want to live in an urban city like Chicago,
it's
an interesting option for them. And this coach has now signed on again for a number of additional years.
Well,
so he's going to be there to welcome them.
I think it's great. I'd love to see Loyola get a shot in the arm. Bennett Wakenight, producer of the program, is a Loyola grad. Mm. He's a rambler. You can tell if you watch. We've got that going for us on the north side. The state released some tourism numbers as well.
Right.
And you always look at tourism numbers askance.
I certainly do, and my editor knows I look at them askance, too. And I noted in the story I wrote about that they increased year over year about 1.4%, the Illinois numbers, which are combined with fold in the Chicago numbers. But, it's interesting that both, they did list where they got the numbers from in the Illinois numbers. They don't talk about that in the Chicago numbers. But, you know, you have to keep in mind that both Rauner and Emanuel are running for re-election, so it helps. And this is one of the few areas in the state and the city where you can somehow manufacture positive news.
They say that 83% of the dollars, the tourism dollars, were leisure travel.
Leisure, right, and only 17. Because I don't know whether, I don't know enough about how the other states do it, but here and in the city, they can mix everything together. Leisure and business is all considered
visitors.
So we
don't really know. I was going to say, is 17% a low number?
Well, it sounds low to me, but we're talking about the whole state here, not just Chicago. I think it's a much more even skew if you're just looking at Chicago by itself. So when you factor in the whole state, that puts down the business end of it.
What's your favorite tourism spot in Illinois?
God, don't put me
on the spot.
Don't
say Navy Pier.
Believe me, I would not say that. I don't know. I've only been to Springfield once, and I don't have a good recollection. I know I'd like to see the Governor's Mansion. That's going to be the big one.
That's a good point.
It's going to be reopened this summer, and I'd be interested to see what Mrs. Rauner has done with that. Apparently, it's going to be much more of a historical presentation. You can learn a lot about the state by going through the mansion. So that would be something I would want to check out.
Have you been to the Lincoln Library?
No.
Oh, well, you should do that then. We'll do a remote from the Lincoln Library.
Right.
You come down. Come on,
it's not just a book. It's not just books, right? There's a lot of other.
Oh no, it's beautiful. It's
right.
Like there's automation,
dioramas, and that sort of thing.
Exactly. Oh. There's the Lincoln hologram. You can't beat it. It really is. It really is pretty nice.
Well, I have to admit, I never was a big Lincoln aficionado, but I mean, I appreciate
what
he did
Kentucky,
for the country.
Too.
I know, but don't.
All right, let's go to the airlines. At the CSO, the change in the C-suite for United.
Correct. The CFO suddenly announced he was out on Thursday evening, or Thursday late Thursday afternoon.
And yesterday.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And the interesting thing about this is, I mean, you know, he came from Allegiant, which is an ultra-low-cost carrier, and both United and American, which are the two big ones operating out of here, have both been trying to figure out what they can pull from these ultra-low-cost carriers and implement into their operations to make them more competitive and get some of that traffic that's gravitating towards those low-cost. But apparently it wasn't working so smoothly, so at least in Levy's.
So it wasn't the sort of thing where they got out of him what they needed and then he moved on. It was that maybe they didn't get out of
it. Maybe they didn't just. I think it was more about the strategy about where he was trying to take the carrier. They didn't feel comfortable with it after he'd been in the seat for almost 2 years.
Okay, one more story, then, or maybe a couple, but I want to talk about this biofuel story. United is one of the airlines invested in this, and this company that's going to turn garbage.
Fulcrum, right.
Fulcrum's going to turn
landfill and garbage turned into perfectly clean fuel that can be put into airplanes. We're still in the very early stages, that they're just building out the first plant to do this in Reno.
But didn't you say, like, by 2020, maybe?
Plant will be online by 2020, and they'll be making, 10.5 million gallons a year of this biofuel.
And we could be flying on garbage.
That's right. I've been sort of aghast by the more I've looked into this, too, but apparently it works beautifully. It won't in the early going, my people tell me that you won't be 100% biofuel. It will be mixed with traditional petroleum until they figure out whether you can fly on that by itself.
So that's fascinating. That's great. That's in Reno, but the other part of your story that's struck me was that then the next facility they build might well be here in Chicago.
That's right. They're not saying anything yet, but all indications are that will be built because United is heavily invested in this, and their largest hub is at O'Hare. So that would be a logical place to have one of these facilities adjacent to.
Louis Lazar from the Chicago Business Journal. Read more at bizjournals.com/Chicago. Thanks for coming by. It's good to see you.
Thank you, sir.